Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, but Myrna Culbert's going to do most of the program, and we're going to be doing an interview with Chuck Morris. Myrna, why don't you pick it up and go from there?
I sure will, Dr. Stan. You rest that voice, and you're doing a lot better. It's coming right back.
I sure am, right.
Okay, dear. Well, and Chuck Morris, how are you? It's been a while since we've talked on the air.
Thank you for inviting me on, and get better, Dr. Stan.
I will, don't you worry.
Okay.
Well, Chuck, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been an interviewee on your show from time to time over the years. And
yes.
Tell me what's new. I understand you're running for office.
I am running for Congress in the 4th Congressional District of Massachusetts. My opponent is Barney Frank. I was on the WROL in Boston, which is the Salem Radio affiliate. I was approached by a Republican Party operative here in the state who said he thought I'd make a good candidate. I've been talking for years to my listeners about running for office. I've urged housewives, teenagers, elderly, anyone who has a little time to jump in and do it and speak out on issues and be heard. And even if you don't win, this is how we're going to at least start to take back our culture. And I just felt that the opportunity was there for me, and I decided to go for it.
Well, I think that's extremely exciting. And you know, if you are urging people to run and then they say, why don't you run, that's probably an omen.
Absolutely.
So how is the campaign going, do you think?
This is one of the reasons I did jump in was because I was presented with enough information to convince me that it's a winnable race. In this district, the last gubernatorial election, conservative Republican Mitt Romney took the district, even if by a hair. And he's well-liked, he's well-regarded. There's been some redistricting that means the district is a little bit more conservative. Barney Frank is never had a serious opponent in 24 years. I know him because I've debated him on my own show many times.
Right.
He flies off the handle, he loses his temper. I think I can, you know, press his buttons publicly, and already it's happening. Already the Boston Globe covered a story on me. Because I brought up the fact that he voted against the Amber Alert legislation.
Really? Why would he do that?
Well, the Amber Alert, as you know, is a voluntary system that helps law enforcement rescue kidnapped children and apprehend kidnappers around the country.
Right.
And he was the only congressman in our state to vote against it. They're all liberal Democrats, too. The only one of 25 nationally. I asked him why he did it on a radio show here in New Bedford, which is in the heart of our district. He responded by saying that he didn't like certain Republican add-ons. So then we put forth a press release saying, please clarify what Republican add-ons would be significant enough to prevent you from voting on a bill that protects children. And the Boston Globe interviewed him. And now the gloves are really off because his response to the Globe was more bizarre than his vote in the first place. He said that he felt obligated to vote against it because one of the add-ons is the insistence that a second-time convicted sex offender receive a minimum mandatory sentence. And the second was that club owners would be more easily prosecuted if they knowingly allowed drug use on the premises, including ecstasy.
Oh, those are a couple pretty interesting reasons.
Well, he was upset about that. He didn't want those laws put in.
Apparently. Yeah, I see what you mean. So we shouldn't do anything about second-time convicted sex offenders. Well, that's interesting to know. Good to know about an opponent. We'll come back in a moment, Chuck.
Just go ahead and pick up, Myrna.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. All right. Well, I'll have to read the music a little bit better. So let's continue with that, Chuck. What then do you see is happening in this race? How are you?
Well, what's happening is I'm shaking them up. There's definitely an interest in the district for someone to come along who's has a little bit of fire in the belly and who's going to say, let's have a change in this state. You know, the state has been all liberal Democrats so long, but people understand that, you know, the government is at least somewhat more conservative than Massachusetts. It's certainly Republican majorities in both houses and a Republican president. And these liberal Democrats don't have the clout that they claim they have anymore. My contention is that it's time for Massachusetts to have someone in Congress who is of the majority party and who can talk to all the committee chairmen and the Speaker of the House, not to mention the President of the United States, and be listened to.
That's probably a pretty pregnant point.
One of the things, Chuck, was that isn't Barney Frank the congressman whose lover was running a bordello out of his residence and was taking homosexuals on tours of the White House during the evening hours? Isn't that what happened?
Yes, it is. That's already ancient history. That was in 1989. Congressman Frank was censured by the House because he was allowing a gay lover to run a prostitution ring out of his home. He was fixing parking tickets, all kinds of stuff. And even the Boston Globe at that time asked him to resign. He didn't resign. One of the reasons he didn't, apparently, was because he said, you know, if you push me out, I'm going to blow the whistle and out all these Republicans who are gay. So Congress backed down. And ever since then, Barney has been reelected handily.
So do you think his scandal in that case hurt him or perhaps even helped him?
I don't think it. I mean, it obviously didn't make any difference. It's ancient history. Yeah, everyone knows. There's nothing that I could bring up that would be new about it. In fact, at this point, all he talks about is his homosexuality and his gay rights issues. And I am very deliberately staying away from it. There's no sense in my getting into it. Everyone knows about it. He's focused on it. I'm focusing on more important things right now, like national security and like taxes and the economy and reducing the size of government.
What do you think is his position, if any, on national security?
He's very bad on national security. The only department in government that he's voted to cut is defense. In the 1990s, he voted in favor of this Torricelli bill, which forbid the CIA from using what was called unsavory characters together.
All right. Music comes up.
Go right ahead.
The music goes down, so we'll continue. So he voted...
He voted to basically denude the CIA of any real power it had. Now, when I was a talk show host, I interviewed Robert Baer, who was the author of a book called See No Evil. He's a CIA agent. And he said that after that vote, the CIA basically turned into just a bunch of people staring at computer screens. They were no longer able to go out in the field and gather intelligence and do all of the stuff that an intelligence gathering organization has to do. Now, it seems to me that left the country very vulnerable, particularly in the previous years leading up to the horrendous events of 9/11. As well, Barney has always voted against missile defense. He's voted against advanced weapon development. In the 1980s, he voted against strategic defense initiative. Now, if this government had funded strategic defense initiative and had been able to develop a nuclear shield, we wouldn't have North Korea today throwing a threat of nuclear missiles on the Pacific coast. Now, I don't know why Barney was so against national security. He has these liberal left-wing utopian ideas that somehow if the country weakens itself, we're going to have world peace. And I think we all know that that's about as crazy as saying that if you leave your car open and you don't lock the door, you're not going to have any more robberies.
You've got to trust the thieves. My goodness, Chuck, why wouldn't you trust the thieves of the world or the Bin Ladens?
Exactly. This is the richest country in the world. It's the freest country in the world. And, of course, you're going to have jealous neighbors who want to take a swipe at us. I mean, that's human nature. A three-year-old can understand that, and he's into these bizarre utopian ideas. The problem is that those nutty ideas are now dangerous because they put people at risk. He's continuing to vote against the Defense Department. He's continuing to try to reduce America's military might.
It's hard really to get inside the head of somebody who's doing that. Well, let alone that he has probably a lot of other things going on in his head. What about say education? What's his situation?
He's a big federal education person. I am calling for phasing out and an outright eventual abolition of the Federal Department of Education. I want to see communities control their own schools like they used to. I'm certainly not in favor, as you know, Myrna, of the dumbing down education modalities like look-say reading and all the rest.
Absolutely.
I want to see an education system that actually teaches a child to think cognitively, that develops patriotic instincts, that develops a morally based understanding, that protects the innocence of children. so that we can have people who graduate who could be sovereign individuals living in a sovereign nation and who can function as free people.
Well, it's terribly important. Of course, that's part of my beat as the author of Phonics Game and Phonicsopoly, is, you know, it is clear that even knowing the failure of Look Say, it's a little bit like Barney Frank voting for all of the anti-defense things. The people who control the schools, including the teachers' unions, etc., do know that the Look Say and whole language methods fail routinely to teach reading, as the National Panel on Reading reports.
That's well, it was put in place by socialist John Dewey back in the early 20th century.
That's correct.
And it's meant to dumb America down, and I think that it needs to go. The Federal Department of Education needs to go. It's nothing but a big union gift that from Jimmy Carter, because they helped elect him president. It hasn't done a darn thing to help educate a single child. It's just a massive bureaucracy. We can save $100 billion if we get rid of it.
$100 billion is pretty hefty toll.
Yes,
well, I've been back to harangue different levels of the Department of Education and whatnot. Some individuals in it are somewhat receptive, but overall, they don't seem to be moving very fast to get really rid of
now, in fact, unfortunately, President Bush is actually increasing it, and I'm opposed to that.
What do you think? How are people responding when you go out and meet a citizen and you talk to him about abolishing the Department of Education? What do they say?
People are excited. People we just opened our campaign headquarters in downtown New Bedford. We're getting invited to Republican town committee meetings. I'm making speeches. I'm doing radio interviews in the district. Bonnie and I are having a battle over the Amber Alert in the pages of the Boston Globe. This campaign is taking on major traction, and we still have 14 months to go. So, this is really the only race going in Massachusetts. But, of course, it does have national implications, which is why I'm doing national radio.
I would think it would get a lot of national press attention, if nothing else, because Barney Frank's fairly well known.
Exactly. Barney Frank is one of America's preeminent leftists, and I am a movement conservative challenging him. So it's more than just a race. It has philosophical implications. It has social implications. If Barney Frank is beaten, that's going to have an earthquake-like effect in this country, I would contend.
I would have a tendency to think so, Chuck, because people are aware, I mean, people who at least pay some attention to politics are aware of Barney. They've been aware probably since that scandal in the 80s at least. And
right.
Then if they really hear, I mean, I would presume they'll get kicked up to forums like the O'Reilly Factor or other national people who might want to promote you as a conservative alternative.
Right. I hope so.
Well, our mouth to their ear.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's moving in that direction.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so if you're able to get the word out to audiences like this one.
Well, you know, one of the things we have to do, and I know if I didn't mention this, my campaign manager would never let me hear the end of it, but we have to raise money, so I'll ask people who like what they hear and who want to support this effort in Massachusetts, they can make an online donation at morseforcongress.com. morse4congress.com. Or just put in my name as your web server, Chuck Morse, M-O-R-S-E. And it'll come up, and you can make an online donation. Send $10, $20,
great.
Doesn't matter.
Well, that would be tremendously helpful. And what about, do you have an 800 number where they could do similarly?
No, we don't have an 800 number, but there's a mailing address there if they want to do it the old-fashioned way.
Okay, what is that mailing address?
That would be 258 Harvard Street, like the college, number 240, Brookline, Massachusetts, 02446. And you can make the checks payable to Morse for Congress, 04.
Morse for Congress, 04, and that's 258 Harvard Street,
number
240?
It's correct, 240.
And Brookline,
Massachusetts.
And what was the zip code again?
It would be 02446.
02446. All right, well, you know, it wouldn't hurt people nationally, since this is a race with national implications, to chip in.
The more we're able to raise, the more I'm going to be able to respond when Barney starts taking the real gloves off, and, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, he's known as to be very nasty. People are warning me, and I know it's coming. And I want to be in a position where I can fight back, and that's going to take money.
I agree with that. What do you think, if you had to speculate, what do you think he may try?
Oh, he's already calling me a right-wing fanatic and all of that stuff, without really saying why. You know, I feel like I'm back in the schoolyard in first grade, and some bully is calling me a dirty Jew.
Uh-oh.
You know, it has that feel to it. He's right-wing this, whatever that means.
Right. That's pretty grim. And
well, it's not exactly, I'm not running against, you know, Mr. Nice Guy here.
No, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a nice...
Politics ain't beanbag, one of the reasons the Republicans picked me, and one of the things that will help is that I'm not afraid to get down in the mud either.
Right. Well, it pays to be thick-skinned in some of these instances, and
Yeah. You've
been out there in public for a long time, so there can't be too many secrets bounding about in your background, or they would already be out there.
There you go. Whatever they can find, it'll all come out. There's nothing really there.
Yeah, well, that's fortunate. And,
I mean, I'm sure someone's going to read over all of my columns all these years, and then they probably will grab a few things and take them out of context. I don't know.
Well, you know what happened.
I'm expecting that.
You know what happened when Bork was nominated for the Supreme Court, so there is...
Well, that's what I'm expecting, and there's not much I can do about it.
People who want to find your kind of politics will presumably find it.
Right.
And it looks like you'll get a good bit of attention.
Well, I just want to mention I've known Chuck for a long time. He's a hardline conservative on all the issues. And, of course, what is the general tone towards the pro-life issue in your area? In other words, Massachusetts traditionally been Catholic, but are these pro-life Catholics or pro-choice Catholics?
Well, I would say that most people are actually somewhat on the middle on that. They personally are opposed to abortion. They don't like, they certainly are against a late-term abortion and partial birth abortion, which is infanticide. They don't want to see federal funding for abortion of any type. But there is, you know, when it comes to early abortion, as evil as it is and as barbaric as it is, it's kind of hard to outlaw such a thing, and that's kind of my position on it. I think we should advocate against it, teach against it, tell women the truth about what abortion does for them spiritually, physically, mentally, but yet ultimately, in early-term abortion, I just don't think it's realistic that the government ban it outright.
You think it would cause more
illegal
activities, et cetera?
It'll be handing a victory to the pro-abortion people. It's just not going to work. It's not going to stop abortion. What will stop abortion is education. It's telling women the truth about abortion, showing them the links between abortion and breast cancer, showing them the links between abortion and what it does to them when a woman gets older and they become depressed and they wonder what would their child have been like had the child been born.
Right.
So I'd say that to the so-called pro-choice movement, which is actually pro-abortion. If you're so pro-choice, let's tell women and tell men and tell the country the truth about abortion and what it is as an evil, morally, spiritually, physically, and in every other way.
Yes, I was interviewing the other day on Dr. Sand's program a man who's written a book called The Cost of Abortion.
And yes, it's horrendous.
Yes. All right, there's a little bit of music. A hard time telling whether we continue or we drop off for a minute. But anyway,
I know you drop off, okay?
Okay.
Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs-Hopker and
Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for outcome-based education. And once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Do you ever feel sort of run down that you need more energy? Well, let me tell you about a product. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and I've used this for close to 10 years, and my family has used it. We've been very, very happy with it. And recently, the company came and offered to sponsor us for a month, so we certainly agreed to that. We think it's a great, great product. It's made from the royal jelly that comes from the beehive. This is what the queen bee eats. It's sold with a money-back guarantee. If at the end of 3 months you're not completely satisfied and you don't have more energy, just give them a call. But if you'd like to get Be Alive Royal Jelly, call 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. And I'm sure you're going to be very, very satisfied with the product. This is Dr. Stan here, and I just want
to tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
This is radio health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamex, the new odorless, 100% pure allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh, crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamex. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
And good afternoon again. This is Myrna Culbert.
Well, there we are. Go ahead, Berta.
Okay, good. Well, Dr. Stan, you're confusing me nicely with the music, but that's good. We're here with Chuck Morse, who's running against Barney Frank in the Massachusetts next year election for Congress. And Chuck, I assume you're still continuing also with your talk show. How does that mesh together?
Actually, I had to take a leave of absence from the talk show.
You did?
Unfortunately.
Okay.
There's this whole FCC business. They felt that it was a situation where if once the papers started to mention that I was thinking of running, they felt there was a conflict of interest.
Okay.
So I had to take a leave.
Which
I suppose it's just as well because I've been very busy with the campaign. I mean, I'm going down to New Bedford practically every evening to make phone calls and to meet with people, and we have a campaign headquarters down there now. So I don't know if I could handle it.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, I presumed the talk show host could still continue, but that'd be a severe deterrent for a lot of talk show hosts not to run for office, wouldn't it?
A lot of talk show hosts have thought of it, but they decided not to because they didn't want to give up their gig.
Yeah, well, I can see that because...
Yeah, me too. Definitely put yourself out there, and my feeling is that I'll come back to talk radio if I lose, and I'll have a lot more insight in terms of the actual political process having gone through it.
I would think so, and people would probably respect that, and I'm sure your old listeners would be happy to hear you back again.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that I'm going to be able to go back if I want to. I hope I win, though. I mean, it looks like it's a winnable race, as I've said.
Well, it would seem like that would be a pretty good target. I mean, not only on the ground of some people's objection to...
You know, there's going to be a lot of surprises in these next several months, and believe me, perception has a lot to do with it. A lot of the race really exists in my own mind, as long as I'm positive, I think that, Barney Frank is like, what he reminds me of? You know the movie A Few Good Men?
Yes.
The character that Jack Nicholson played. You know, you want the truth, you can't handle the truth.
Right.
Bonnie was like that guy up doing testimony in that movie. You know, if I get a chance to debate him and I bring up a couple of issues and we go at it on some things, people are going to see what he's made out of because he hasn't been tested in 25 years.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of instances on TV or whatnot.
Oh,
there didn't seem to be much pressure, but he did look not too tightly.
He's irrational. He really is. I mean, he doesn't connect the dots. He rambles on. He gets angry and he starts lashing out at people. And I'll tell you, he doesn't. In a good clean fight, which I hope to have, where you bring up solid issues and you say, "Excuse me, Congressman, but you voted for every tax increase since 1981. You know, you did this, you did that." It's going to be we're going to see some real fireworks.
I would think so.
Yep.
What do you think will be the top two or three issues you want to focus on?
Well, the two big issues are national security, of course, and the second is the issue of big government. He's an advocate of socialism at home and surrender abroad. I think people are going to care about that in this district. You know, let's not forget that it was Logan Airport where the hijackers of 9/11 took off.
Is that in your district?
Well, it's not in our district. It's in Boston, though.
Yeah, surely.
Yep.
Well, people, I think, are still hurting, really, from that whole affair, and I would think that national security was and is an issue for them, that they would be open to more approaches from your direction.
Well, Leo, let me just intercede. I'm just, one of the big issues of this election is going to be globalism. What is his position on globalism? In other words, this idea of open borders, no tariffs, and what is your position?
Well, Barney Frank is a big open borders advocate. He actually authored in 1998, I believe, a bill called the Family Reunification Act. What this did was it allowed deported illegal aliens who had been convicted of crimes, including crimes involving pornography and terrorism, to come back to the country to appeal their convictions because they had a relative in this country. He has been one of those who's been a major advocate of breaking down immigration barriers for everyone, using all kinds of interlocutions and schemes to get more and more people into the country and on the dole. He's a major advocate, of course, of big socialistic programs which put lots of liberals on payrolls and perpetrate poverty and the misery in the cities that he happens to represent. And he certainly is a New World Order globalist. There's no question about that. He's talking about using the UN as a forum to force foreign nations to boycott them unless they recognize homosexual rights. So, he's on all those issues, he's not good.
That's extremely interesting. All right, we'll take up another call.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, Allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure Allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure Allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamex. Alamex provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamex? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened to TWA 800 when they went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Well, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
And it is a good time to call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, get Dr. Stan's book, Brotherhood of Darkness, get the homeschooling materials for under a couple of $100.
Okay, you just go ahead and pick up.
And while you're at it, you might as well get Phonixopoly. Chuck, what do you think then will be the single biggest thing? Well, let's take up what are you going to talk about with respect to education and Barney Frank?
Well, again, I mean, I'm calling for the abolition of the Federal Department of Education. I want families whose sons and daughters go to the schools to have the control over the nature of their children's education. An issue, of course, that I could bring up with Barney and Will is his opposition to such things as school choice. Inner-city kids. You know, this is another example of his lack of caring for children, the other one being the Amber Alert, and siding with these massive public unions that are bankrupting not only our government but local communities. In 1995, the teachers' union had a bill passed which allowed them to have their shop manager get a full salary in every city and town where they operate, and for one example is the city of Newton, which is in my district. The NEA shop manager actually is given a house and a six-figure stipend just to be there.
Good
heavens. This is why cities and towns are going broke.
Well, you know, they have said that the NEA has the Democratic Party as a wholly owned subsidiary.
Yes,
and that
it does.
They're not
concerned over the interests of children. I'm not against teachers receiving good pay, and I think that it should be based upon merit. In fact, I'd hope they get more if they're good. But this just has everything to do with not only a seizure of power, but also that the NEA has a left-wing agenda as well. They are, as you would say, Dr. Stan, part of the secular humanist outlook, morally relativistic idea. They are insinuating a religious orientation and political orientation into the schools, their own, not the Judeo-Christian.
Well, they have been for many, many decades since the time of...
Oh, yeah. Well, my good friend Sam Blumenfeld, I think, has written the definitive book on this topic, NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education.
Yes, that's a worthwhile book. I'm sure Dr. Sam carries it at the 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and that's a good book by Dr. Blumenfeld, who, by the way, is also an advocate of phonics. He put out a little series of, a little book of phonics materials, et cetera, and he's delved into what happened, that phonics, in effect, was thrown out. It was, you know, as Dr. Stan likes to say, all of this cannot just be an accident.
No, we can just look at John Dewey. I mean, he was a socialist, and he wanted to create a collectivist mind, whatever that is, and he understood that the best way to do it, and Sam, of course, documents this quite clearly in his book, was to get children, scramble their brains, basically, to be blunt, to get them away from thinking on their own, developing cognitive ideas, and to force them to have to develop this bizarre collectivist dream, whatever the heck it is. But it was crippling.
Yeah, it's an assault on the mind. I mean, first of all, it's teaching them that everything is irrational, everything has to just be memorized. There is no system, there are no concepts, there is no logic behind the English language. And so they're just hit over the head with, look, Run, Jane, Run. Or now it has gone on to the point where they don't even have the Run, Jane, Run books. You could, I suppose, argue that the Run, Jane, Run books at least had some method. Now the contention in the schools is just surround a child with print and the child will learn to read as easily and as naturally as it learns to talk.
Okay, let me just intervene for a minute here.
Sure.
One of the big issues, I think, by the time we get around to the election next year will be the influence of NAFTA and the massive exporting of American jobs to other countries. Now, of course, the Republican Party is free trade. Where do you stand on that?
I am opposed to the NAFTA agreement. I'm opposed to the GATT agreement. I'm not sure that at this point it can be undone. I mean, to me, to suggest that I would do that as a congressman might be a little more ambitious. I'd probably be biting off more than I can chew. But I would say this. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution gives Congress the sole power to regulate tariffs and trade. I support Congress doing this in a way that protects American industry, protects American manufacturing, protects American jobs. That is a basic function and basic building block of any sovereign state. It is just as important as deciding as an individual who comes into your home and who doesn't. This is part of freedom. I support President Bush's recent placing of a tariff on steel imports for that reason. He decided to do something that would protect the steel industry. John F. Kennedy did the same thing. I support that. I think that the president has the right to recommend to Congress that a tariff be placed on any industry they choose, whether it be for economic reasons or moral reasons.
We got a Fred calling from Salinas, so let's put Fred on here.
Good.
Fred?
Yes, Fred.
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, I can just barely hear you.
I hear you better now.
I was wondering if you knew who Leo Strauss was, and if you do know who he is, what is your stand on his philosophy?
I don't know who he is. I really don't. I apologize.
We'll have that discussion some other time, Fred.
Okay.
I know who he is, and I have very strong feelings on Leo Strauss. Okay.
Send me his book.
Right.
All right. Anything else?
Okay.
Go right ahead.
All right. We'll take that up. One of our other guests in the last day or two was reading a quote from Adam Smith with respect to tariffs and saying that the opposition quotes aspects of Adam Smith that they think stand for free trade, but there is a quote that says, in effect, if another country is having practices that increase, you know, that lower its costs while the costs in your country are fixed by your moral views or whatever else is going on, then it's appropriate to use tariffs. I thought that was a rather interesting point. How does that strike you, Chuck?
It strikes me as being absolutely true. I'm in favor of free enterprise as opposed to free trade. There's a difference. You know, a nation, it's quite true that the nation has a right to insist that, for example, communist slave labor isn't employed, or these gigantic Laogai system in communist China, which is imprisoning millions of people. I've interviewed people from China who've told me about this, and their goods are filling up Walmart. Now, I don't know why Walmart, Sam Walton or his successor, they should go to China and say, listen, you know, do something not only about this Laogai, but get on North Korea, or else we're going to cut trade with you. I don't know where the morality of our corporations is.
Where does Bonnie Frank stand on free trade?
I can't totally answer that, but you know, there's a fairly solid pattern regarding his views, and I would be willing to bet that he's a big NAFTA and GATT supporter.
Yeah, hasn't certainly the Northeast lost a lot of textiles there? Hasn't that really had a real serious impact on your economy?
It has. I mean, Fall River and New Bedford, which are in our district, used to be major textile centers. They are no longer. Fall River was called Thimble City. It's really practically gone now. It's very sad when you go there. And yet people in those districts who are unemployed and who are poor, they all vote for Bonnie. They don't seem to understand that he's done nothing for them in 24 years. He's certainly not brought in any opportunity or any economic activity.
Do you think you can get to them with that message and get out there and let
no.
them know?
I don't think I'll be able to get to them, no. But I think I'm going to get to enough people. I hope to.
Well, by the way, one of the other aspects of the trade matter is we are exporting not only textile milled kinds of jobs, we're exporting intellectual kinds of jobs. We are exporting PhD jobs, where a PhD in India can be hired for, I've heard figures like $10,000, $12,000. In this country, maybe $100,000. And we're probably making the guy over here train his replacement and then go fry burgers at McDonald's.
I know there are a lot of PhDs and a lot of people who hold various degrees in this country who are filling orange juice classes at hotels. Perhaps that's this country has a great deal of red tape and regulation that has squelched creativity. In fact, my good friend Sam Blumenfeld actually spent some time in communist China about a year ago, and he said that even China, at this point, in a sense, is freer than America when it comes to local regulation of business. You can actually make some money there. You can do some things. You don't have the government involved in every aspect. This has a lot to do with all of these bureaucracies that have built up layer upon layer. One of the things I will do if I go to Congress is I will get together with like-minded congressmen like Ron Paul and others. We will try to form a caucus, and we will insist that all government agencies, executive and legislative, be investigated and find out where we can have savings. I think we could probably cut all of their budgets by 20% right off the bat before we really start to take a look at what they're doing, how far they've strayed from their original missions, how many extra people they have on their payrolls, how much property they own, how much duplication is going on. I think we could reduce our government by probably a third without affecting even basic services as they stand now. There are almost 4 million federal employees, and it's growing every year. Barney keeps voting for more appropriations, creating more agencies, raising taxes. He's voted against tax cuts. And, at some point, this whole thing is going to implode. This is a real issue. People have to understand that this is going to affect their future. This is a mortgage on every future of every American, not only financially and not only spiritually, but actually in terms of their ability to function and operate as free citizens.
Well, there's practically no manufacturing base left and not much of a service base if they start. They're exporting typing jobs to Ireland because the people here can't read well enough, too, and exporting
quarter
million technicians.
What about Medicare? Because it looks to me like, you know, in relatively few years, Medicare and Social Security will be in real trouble. As you know, we have stolen all of the money out of there and put in IOUs with nothing to pay the IOUs back. So are you going to talk at all about Medicare and Social Security, which every congressman or candidate is told, don't talk about it?
I am talking about it, Dr. Stan. You're quite right. 1965. Lyndon B. Johnson basically gutted the Social Security Trust Fund by borrowing the money to pay for the war on poverty and the war in Vietnam, both wars of which we lost. Right now you have, as you say, bonded debt. There's no money in those accounts. It's a mortgage on our future. We're going to have to pay it. You know, people who say they like Social Security as it is, they're the people that are actually hurting the future of our trust, of our retirement, more than people who are telling the truth, which is that Social Security is not only bankrupt, but it's going to further bankrupt all of us. It's nothing more than a tax. I advocate a gradual move toward a privatizing of Social Security. There are countries in the world who are trying this. Chile did it. Under Pinochet, they had Milton Friedman and what was called the Chicago Economist go down there, and today they have a privatized Social Security. They are the most prosperous economy in Latin America. Even China is trying it. There's no reason why this country can't face a reality regarding this. I'm not suggesting that the government can't have a role, for example, in ensuring that there's some sort of an insurance annuity for people. But at the same time, the investment in Social Security itself is a ripoff to working men and women. That money could go into a private fund where it collects interest, where the person upon retirement could actually have a reasonable nest egg that they could pass on to their heirs. That would go a long way toward reducing poverty. Compound interest is what'll raise the boats, not basically throwing it into the rat hole of the government where it disappears.
Sounds as if they did put in some kind of privatization of Social Security, or at least of aspects of it, that certainly people could at least count on that particular account as theirs.
That's right. And President Bush has been very courageous in his talk about this during the last election. He needs to have reinforcement on that in Congress.
Is there much support in Congress, or are there other people that you think would support that position along with you?
Well, I actually interviewed Grover Norquist on this topic about a year ago, and he said that there is support, but it has to be done in phases. The American people have to be educated. The first thing that needs to be done is the cutting of taxes, and that should run concomitant with a reduction in the size of government, the getting rid of the capital gains tax or the reducing it down, the removal of the death tax, the removal of the marriage tax, the removal of certain other taxes, and then, you know, you get to the Social Security issue. It has to be done gradually, obviously, because people have invested into this rotten system for 40, 50 years, and their investment has to be protected. So, you know, there has to be a gradual phasing or reform of it that would take decades to do. We're moving in that direction.
One of the things that is going to be a real issue next year are the massive, not only a federal deficit, but trade deficit, and they're going to pin that on every Republican that they can. So how are you going to address that issue? As we're talking, by next year, $480 billion national deficit. That's admitted, and that doesn't include the money they're stealing from Social Security and Medicare. So how are you going to keep from getting tarred with that brush?
The Republicans could do a much better job on it. They could do a much better job on reducing the government. But I think that the Democrats, for them to be complaining about it is really quite laughable. They have Barney Frank tell us that he's complaining about President Bush's deficit when he's voted for every program since 1981. President Bush's deficits will be Barney Frank's bankruptcy. We need to have conservative Republicans to urge President Bush toward the agenda that he also believes in and stands for, which is a further reduction in the deficit by reducing the cost of government itself. You know, private sector has to pull in their belt when things go badly. Why is government so sacrosanct? You know, why is a government employee any different than an employee of Enron or Global Crossing? People are losing their jobs. And, you know, tragically, and I don't want to see anyone lose their job, but a government employee, if their job is not something that actually provides a service, then they should lose the job as much as anyone in the private sector, and ultimately they'll probably get an honest job anyway.
If they move from a government job to a job in some kind of industry, they'll actually produce something which could swell the gross national product instead of eating it up.
That's right. And plus all the regulations they were passing, maybe they'll go by the wayside, and all of us can make some money.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. What would you do about the illegal alien situation?
I think that they are illegal, and I think that they should be sent back to wherever they came from. I mean, either that or they should be given citizenship. I'm not against immigration. My grandparents were immigrants. I'm against the idea of the immigrant being met at the border by such organizations as the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild and Atslan and others, who basically help people get on the dole and help people get into the public, welfare system.
Right.
If people want to come here and actually work, we could help them become citizens, but the rest of them should go.
Well, that makes makes a certain amount of sense, at least to Californians who are out here contemplating, I think probably tonight, the signing of the driver's license bill for illegal aliens.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
How could an illegal alien show up to get their license? They're illegal. They should be arrested.
Well, maybe, you know, we could always figure maybe it's a giant scam to get them to show up for the driver's license and goodbye, but I fear that's not the case.
We live in a world gone mad, Chuck, and there's just a few of us are still saying everybody thinks we're crazy.
Right. Yeah.
You're right, Chuck.
Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Do you ever feel sort of run down, that you need more energy? Well, let me tell you about a product. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and I've used this for close to 10 years, and my family has used it. We've been very, very happy with it. And it, recently, the company came and offered to sponsor us for a month, so we certainly agreed to that. We think it's a great, great product. It's made from the royal jelly that comes from the beehive. This is what the queen bee eats. It's sold with a money-back guarantee. If at the end of 3 months you're not completely satisfied and you don't have more energy, just give them a call. But if you'd like to get Be Alive Royal Jelly, call 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. And I'm sure you're going to be very, very satisfied with the product. This is Dr. Stan here.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps. And it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future, are under attack today.
And Chuck Morse, we're coming a little bit to the end of the program. I think it might be appropriate if you would give a one-word final thought, and also how people can indeed contribute. You know, if people are thinking they'd like to stem the tide on some of this nationally, they could do a lot worse than to throw some money your way so that you can stand for a conservative cause, which, whether it's in Massachusetts or not, is really for the national cause that affects the country. Tell again where they can reach you and how they can get to you.
Thank you, Myrna. This is a vote between socialism and freedom, between moral standards versus amoral. It is a national referendum, and I am basically putting myself out here on the line to do this. I have left my job as a talk show host to do it, and I'm going to be devoting my attention to it over the next 14 months. So I'm asking for you to get involved as well. You can do that by going to my website, morseforcongress.com, M-O-R-S-E, forcongress.com, and contribute online. You know, $10, $20, $50, whatever. You know, I'm going to need to raise money in order to counter what is going to be a very brutal attack by this opponent, Barney Frank. A victory against Barney is something that we can all be proud of. It's going to be a very exciting time. There is already people that are getting very excited about this race. Young people, people in college are starting to call me, you know, who have been dealing with these old line Stalinist professors and administrators, and they're really quite excited that this is happening. It is a real movement. It's a grassroots campaign. I'm not getting big money people coming up. I'm getting grassroots checks from people for $25, $50. That's really what's going on, and it's starting to happen. So if you want to help out and you want to get involved politically, go to morseforcongress.com and make an online donation.
Okay, or 208 Harvard number 40.
Right, the address for Morse for Congress is 248.
248.
I'm saying 258, excuse me.
58, okay.
Harvard Street, number 240, Brookline, Massachusetts, 02446.
All right, and you know, I'm sure that the opposition is going to be getting a lot of national money, so it would be people who are listening to this program and think along Dr. Sand's lines to do something for Chuck Morse. Chuck, it's been interesting to be on the interviewing side of you this time, and I look forward to it again. Dr. Sand thanks you. I thank you. And
thank you, Myrna, and thank you, Dr. Sand.
Right. And again, people can reach Dr. Sand's organization, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can get even Phonixopoly there, together with some nice bonuses, at about a third of the cost of other phonics programs, by the way. And you can get homeschooling for a couple hundred dollars, and the books and tapes that you heard described earlier, including Dr. Sand's book, which would really warrant a look, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and all of the book and tape sets that we've been talking about. And Chuck Morse, I want to thank you again, and you know, good luck. That's a big cause to take on. It's a big sacrifice to step aside from your talk show for the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised that A, you'll win, and B, when you've finished up cleaning up Washington, you can clean up the national airwaves.
All right, well, we'll have a great time.
Okay, that's great. And do call Dr. Stan, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. He'll give you a complimentary copy of his newsletter if you haven't had one before. By the way, the recent issue is terrific. It's an investigation of some of the new diseases that are creeping out of the tropics or, as the case may be, out of the laboratories to kill a bunch of people, and you ought to know about that. So call Dr. Stan's organization right now, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. This is Myrna Culbreth, the author of Phonics Game and Phonixopoly. Dr. Stan, rest the voice and take care of yourself.
Bye-bye. And God bless both of you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. God bless. Bye-bye.